Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2. All the action, excitement and drama from across the entire women's game.
Cleared off the line by Steph Horton.
Including the Women's Super League.
Emma Bright is there to tap it in.
And the Euro 2021 qualifiers.
On the edge of the area to Emsley. And Emsley's going to finish it off.
World-beating big match conversation.
There's Jodie Taylor.
On the station that's raising the game for women's football.
And she scores.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
Hello, good evening and welcome to Women's Football Weekly with me, Faye Carruthers. We're still here keeping you fully up to date with the latest news in the women's game during these uncertain times. This week, our player of the week is England and Lyon defender Alex Greenwood. She's back in the UK during lockdown and ready to give you a behind-the-scenes look at what she's been up to. Women's football writer Rich Laverty will bring you all the latest on talks to resume the WSL and Championship seasons, and we'll find out how academy and youth setups are surviving as well.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers.
Hi, I'm Fran Kirby and you're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2.
First, though, I want to hear from you guys. This week, please tell me what your favourite women's football ground is and why. I know none of us are able to be there at the moment, but perhaps you're dreaming of going back to Chelsea's King's Meadow or Sheffield United's Proact Stadium. Let us know. You can tweet us at TalkSport2 or use the hashtag TSWFW and we'll read out all of your tweets and thoughts throughout the show. No football? No problem here on Women's Football Weekly. We've still got plenty to talk about. Always news and developments in the world of football, of course. And that's what women's football writer Rich Laverty is here to update you on. Rich, good to speak to you. What have you been up to?
Ooh, I wish I was up to a bit more, Faye, if I'm being honest.
Don't we all?
And I'm trying to keep busy. And yeah, I mean, there's always news happening in football, isn't there? It's just a different kind of news at the moment. So waiting to get back to some kind of normality, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. What have you been up to? Any good stories that you've got up your sleeve for us?
There's a few little bits coming out that I've been working on, fortunately, that were kind of lined up before all this happened. You know, I'm a feature writer, first and foremost, so, you know, being the match reporters, I think, have been a bit more affected. Obviously, my role with Sheffield United has been more affected, but yeah, got a few things on the go and like I said, it's just finding ways of keeping busy at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. On Thursday though, I mean, this did keep us all busy. Confirmed by the FA that the season for tiers 3 to 7 of the women's game definitely over. Of course, they announced that a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, various appeals lodged, but they finally ratified that original decision. Do you think it was the right one?
It's a really difficult one. I don't think we'll know maybe whether it's the right one for a few months until this has settled down and we find out what's happening also with Premier League, EFL and obviously WSL and the Championship as well. I think what surprised me was the speed of it. I just think I don't really understand what the rush is. You know, we're not, you know, we keep being told the Premier League, the WSL, etc., that the last thing they're talking about at the moment is voiding the season. So why are they so desperate to do it with the lower tiers? And people say it's to do with money. And, you know, it kind of backs that theory up when you can't really think of another logical reason to to avoided them, you know, and it doesn't seem like the clubs, not all of them, especially the women's clubs, were not particularly consulted on it. It seems a lot of clubs are not happy. Obviously, I think over 60 put an appeal in. There's still some clubs that are unhappy now, even that it's been ratified. So I think we're still going to hear a lot about it. And you know, it makes me wonder if the season does continue and we go on to, you know, September, October, what do these clubs do? Do they restart as normal in August, or do they have to sit around and twiddle their thumbs, you know, for another 5, 6, 7 months until we've all got our seasons finished? So I'm just a little bit baffled by it. It may turn out to be the right decision. It may turn out that everything gets voided, and I don't think we can guess either way yet, but I was just surprised more than anything. I just didn't see what the rush was to make that decision.
Do you know what? I haven't actually thought about that. What are they going to do? As you say,
I don't know.
You know, it's crazy to think that they may have to wait potentially. I mean, they're saying, aren't they, that they would hope, well, the EFL certainly have said in the last couple of days that they would hope to be able to get the rest of the championship season done, for example, in a 2-month period. So if, you know, and this is all speculation, obviously, if we were to resume in July or August, that takes us up to September or October. And so really, you couldn't then start another season until November. And so, as you say, there'd be months more for them to wait.
Yeah, I don't obviously know what the financial then implications are about for these teams, especially, you know, the ones down the lower end of the pyramid that don't have a lot of money, whether that's men's or women's teams. So yeah, I'd be interested to know what the reasoning was that went into that, and obviously what their plans are for those leagues moving forward. Are they going to restart as normal, or are they going to have to wait for everybody else? It just seems a really bizarre thing to have made that decision so quick, you know, when we're only in April, and that's the one thing I can't really get my head around.
Rebecca Myers in The Times over the weekend highlighted a number of concerns we've been discussing here on Women's Football Weekly since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. Financially, the one that I find most baffling, in addition to the one that we've just spoke about, is there's also not been an official announcement on any specific financial relief for the women's game. The FA have just said they're in consultation with clubs, but, you know, no relief fund like the EFL have announced, for example.
Yeah. I mean, I hope there is going forward, because I do fear for, you know, I mean, we're talking about the National League, obviously, that has been, you know, voided. But even in the Championship, you know, you've got independent teams. You've got teams like London Bees and, you know, your Durhams and your London Cities and, you know, even teams that are linked with clubs lower down the pyramid, you know, Charlton, and you go even further down to teams like Lewis. So, you know, the rumours people are talking about, you know, is licensing going to be opened up again, because the FA are worried that some teams, you know, might drop out of the league. Again, that opens then up a whole new, you know, question about, well, how do you complete the season if some of the teams aren't there anymore? But, you know, that's just a carry-on effect of everything we're talking about at the moment. So there has to be some relief fund. I mean, it's all well and good saying to teams you have to be financially sustainable, but, you know, nobody plans for something like this. Not a single club in the country, men's or women's, has planned for this eventuality. You can spend as little as you want, and I guarantee every single women's team is frugal with their spending, because there's not a lot of it. So there has to be, you know, or else we're going to have a massive shift where we, again, lose a lot of teams, just as we were looking for a little bit of stability in the women's game, and we just can't let that happen.
No. I feel like a stuck record as well, because I seem to pose this question to everybody every single week. But despite the Danish FA announcing this at the beginning of April, UEFA themselves have still not confirmed the Women's Euros in 2021 is going to be moved back a year. I know it's a logistical nightmare for them, so perhaps not as much of a priority because it's still a year away in their thinking, but surely they've got to state their intention soon.
Yeah, I think you're certainly right in that it's probably not the priority that obviously the men's is, just because of the time frame and the fact that the women's Euros is still over a year away. But I don't know what the legalities are behind when they can announce something in terms of the shift. And do they have to wait for the FA to confirm it? Do the FA have to wait for all the clubs and stadiums and councils that are obviously going to be involved in the tournament? Do they all have to confirm that they can still do that? I have no idea what the contracts say with that, but yeah, I mean, you would expect some kind of even, you know, just a confirmation, even if there's not a lot of detail in it, because there's no real way now you can have that tournament next year. The Men's Euros has been pushed back into June, July. The Olympics are going to be at the end of July. So, and obviously a lot of the women's players will be involved in that. So there's no possible way you can have that women's tournament next summer now. So it has to be in 2022. So I can only think there are some legal reasons for why they haven't done that. Or like you said, maybe they are just so busy with reorganising the men's tournament that it is a lesser priority because of the time frame and the fact that tournament is now likely going to be over 2 years away. But yeah, you would expect some kind of confirmation, because the fact that there is now two major tournaments next summer means you can't possibly play the women's tournament.
No, absolutely. You mentioned it yourself there. Does it almost feel, though, as if the women's leagues are being treated as an afterthought throughout all of this? You touched earlier on your point about the growth of the game, and Norway and Lyon striker Ada Hegerberg came out this week and said, I'll read the quote out, "It's very, very important women's football doesn't lose position. Obviously, men's football is in first place with all the questions about money and when leagues will restart. But it's very important women's football pushes for position as well. We will be sitting in the second row in all of this, but we can't fade into the background." I mean, very important words there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it doesn't, obviously. And I think, again, it's kind of all ifs, buts and maybes. And I think whatever happens, I think every league is going to probably get more attention just because of what's happened. You know, when the women's game comes back, I think people will be more curious about what happens. Are their fans allowed in? You know, who's going to win the league? You know, who's going to get promoted from the championship? And because we've now waited so long for this to happen. But depending on how it does all pan out, it might actually be a positive. And again, you know, I'm speculating because nobody really knows what's going to happen. But, you know, we've had the big discussion and people talk about it every day about will games come back behind closed doors. And I think particularly in the Premier League, where you have 50, 60, 70,000 people, I can't comprehend, you know, full stadiums like that in the current situation. Whereas in the Championship and in the WSL, you've got a few hundred people going to some grounds that hold over 10,000 people. So it might be possible for women's teams to have fans, and therefore, you know, does that then open a door for men's fans that have been starved of football and can't actually go and watch their clubs?
Can they differentiate that, though? I mean, I absolutely see your point.
It's difficult, don't get me wrong. And like you said, you know, it is all ifs, buts and maybes at the moment, you know, because nobody knows what's going to happen. But, you know, it might not be a one-size-fits-all thing. You know, some teams play in very small stadiums where people are crowded in. You know, you take teams like Sheffield United, who play at the Proact, and London Bees, who play at the Hive, two stadiums that hold over 10,000 people, and you get crowds of 300-400. Maybe they could do it, but like you say, I think they would have to make it a one-size-fits-all thing. It wouldn't be fair for some teams to have fans and some not to. But, you know, it could be something that works. It's all speculation, but it might be something that puts, you know, the women's game in the forefront if they can have fans, and maybe some of the bigger leagues can't.
This is why I really like you, Rich, because you put a positive spin on everything, because everybody else I've spoken to has all these concerns about what it could do damage-wise to the growth of the women's game, bearing in mind the buzz of last year's World Cup, building up to this year's Olympics, which has now been moved, all of those kind of things. And you're actually saying it could potentially be an opportunity. So what do the FA need to do in terms of trying to turn it into something positive?
Yeah, I mean, touching upon what we said earlier, they have to make sure that the clubs don't fall by the wayside. You know, if the WSL restarts and the Championship restarts, it has to be with the teams, you know, that were playing at the start of March when the league was carrying on as normal. You know, if we lose any team from either league, you know, it would be a travesty, you know, at this stage in the season because of something that's completely out of their control. And that goes back to financial support. There has to be a proper plan in place for these teams to survive. There has to be a proper plan in place for them to be able to play their games, whether it's at their stadiums or not at their stadiums. And you know, moving forward, you know, you talk about positives, but another positive might be that, you know, we have three major tournaments in three consecutive years now. You know, the Olympics next year, the Euros in 2022, and the World Cup in 2023. You know, three massive tournaments for the women's game. three massive tournaments for England / Team GB. So, again, it is all if, buts and maybes, because we've got no idea when the season will restart, if it will restart. So I think we've got to try and be positive about it at least at the moment and hope that things do go back to normal sooner rather than later, and we can finish the season and we can get crowds in and then look towards next season whenever that time may be.
Very well said. Glass half full. And you've mentioned this stadium twice, at least twice already. And you've alluded to the fact you may well be quite heavily involved with Sheffield United. But just finally, before I let you go, we're asking everybody what their favourite women's football ground is and why. You obviously have been to many, if not all of them. So what's yours?
Yeah, I like that you mentioned the Pro Act at the start. I'd definitely put that one up there for obvious reasons. I always enjoy going to the CFA at Man City. I think from a media point of view, obviously, it's incredibly modern and the facilities are excellent. I think I always used to like going to Doncaster Bells, you know, when they played at the Keep Moat. There was a very family feel there. I think further afield, you know as well as I do, Faye, out of the World Cup last year, the stadiums out there were fantastic.
Oh, you know,
particularly Lyon and Nice, you know, the stadiums were out of this world compared to anything we used to hear. I think from a work point of view and the fact that I've been there probably more than any other stadium, you know, the CFA is a next level for media and for facilities and how modern it is. I know some fans don't disagree, but probably from where I've worked at the most, I'll probably go with that one.
Love it. Absolutely brilliant. Thanks so much for coming on and talking to us, Rich. Really interesting points there. I hope to speak to you again shortly. Rich Laverty there, women's football writer. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2 with me, Faye Carruthers. Don't forget, if you miss any of our shows, you can now catch up by downloading our podcast. It's available on Spotify and iTunes. Today's show is going to be available to download from 4 o'clock tomorrow. Now, can you really keep a lioness locked up? England and Lyon's Alex Greenwood is next.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers.
Hello, this is Farah from Reading FC Women. You're listening to the Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2.
This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers. Lovely to have you along with us. Today, we're asking you to tell us what is your favourite women's football ground and why. Tweet us at TalkSport 2 or you can use the hashtag TSWFW and we'll read out your tweets throughout the show. Antonia has been in touch. She says, missed the lovely atmosphere at King's Meadow on match day, by far my favourite. And Marie is a big Hammers fan. She says she's missing her match day routine, walking to Rush Green. Great stadium to visit, as it's where they train too. It is indeed. Marie and Antonia, thank you very much. You can tweet us at TalkSport2 or use the hashtag TSWFW. Now, throughout lockdown, we of course want to keep you in touch with the top players during these uncertain times, and we usually would do here on Women's Football Weekly, so we're still doing it. And this week, you have England and Lyon defender Alex Greenwood as company. Alex, lovely to chat to you. It's been a while. How are you doing?
Hi, Faye. Yeah, all good, thanks. Hope you're all right.
Yeah, all good here, thank you. You're back in the UK, aren't you, instead of France?
Yeah, I'm back home. I've been home for a few weeks.
Wonderful. And how is it? At least you've brought some of the French sunshine over with you, which is very well received.
Yeah, it helps, I suppose, in situations like this. It's nice to have the sun out.
Yeah, absolutely. For our listeners who don't know, your boyfriend is Sheffield United's Jack O'Connell. So I'm presuming you've got all the gym equipment you need at home and at least someone you can practice some skills with.
Yeah, we're quite lucky. We've got a really good gym in ours. And like you said, we can replicate our gym programmes together. You know, when you've got your 1 hour a day to head to the field, I'm quite lucky that we can both do that together, really. So it's been good motivation.
Absolutely. Make us all jealous. Tell us how you've kitted it out.
Yeah, we've got most things, you know, treadmill, walk by weight and stuff like that. So, you know, it's been kind of easy for us to follow a programme. But to be honest with you, the best part of the day is probably getting out on the field and getting some fresh air. So as much as we've got all the gym equipment, I'm enjoying getting to the field and going a bit old school, I think.
Oh, brilliant. Old school. What have you been doing? Jumpers as goalposts?
Yeah, trainers as cones, jumpers as goalposts. It's brilliant. I love it.
Amazing. Just on your training, I mean, I know you can keep up your gym work and everything else, and it almost feels a little bit like rehab maybe, but, you know, it's not quite match fitness, is it? How do you keep that up?
No, it's not. And to be honest, you're never really going to get a 90-minute football match replication in training. And that can be quite difficult. But, you know, as best as you can get in your heart rate zones. And, you know, that's monitored by your heart rate apps, watches and stuff like that. And, you know, position-specific type running. Just been trying to stay on top of that, really. And like you said, the weight, the strength program. So, yeah, it's difficult and you're never going to get the same as a game outcome, but as close as you can is good enough at the moment.
What have Leon been doing with you? Are you on a specific training programme? Are they monitoring you from afar?
Yeah, well, I think over in France, their situation's a little bit different to ours. I think their lockdown's a little bit more is tighter than ours, so I'm not sure they're allowed to head to a field and stuff, so I'm still able to do that, so I can do a bit more position specific stuff, whereas there's more hit intervals, watt bikes, and it's, you know, the strength coach there has mixed it up really well, to be fair to him, but yeah, all fun and trying to keep people entertained every day, which can be hard sometimes.
Yeah, I presume you've got WhatsApp groups and things to keep in touch. Now, you weren't sure what time you could come on Women's Football Weekly tonight because you got some kind of team quiz. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, we were actually meant to have a Lion FC quiz tonight. It's actually been cancelled because, you know, we've got players all over the world, some in America and stuff like that, and trying to get us all together at the same time at once actually can still prove quite difficult. So that's postponed till the end of the week. But yeah, it's, again, them little things are great, and it's good laughs and stay in touch with the girls.
Who's the quiz master?
Wendy, our media.
Love Wendy. I can imagine her organising everybody. Glass of wine in hand.
Absolutely. She's brilliant.
Excellent. We've got Bev Priestman on, England assistant manager, next week as well. So we'll find out who ended up winning that quiz. I presume that Bev will be taking part.
She better be. I'm not sure she'll make an excuse and try and get out of it or something, but yeah. Yeah, she better be involved.
Brilliant. Now, we haven't actually properly spoken to you on Women's Football Weekly since you made the move from Manchester United to Lyon in the summer. I know we've kept in touch on text, but it's great to actually be able to get you on and tell our listeners, because it was a pretty big decision for you. You admitted at the time it was a bit of a risk. What are you learning out there that you couldn't have learned in the WSL?
Yeah, like you said, it was a massive decision. You know, from people looking out, they would probably say, well, why? You know, you just got promoted to WSL, where we wanted to be as a club. I was the captain, and I was at home. In essence, I was really happy. I probably couldn't have been happier. I had everything I wanted, really. So after me saying all that, people probably think, well, you know, why would you leave? But I'm 25 at the time, and, you know, not many opportunities come your way, like signing for Lyon. And I just felt at that stage of my career, I didn't think it'd happen again. And for me, it was just kind of too big of an opportunity to turn down. And to be truthfully honest with you, I was flying over to France and I still wasn't sure if I was going to sign. That's how much of a big decision it was. And I weighed everything up and spoke to people closest to me. And, you know, I think, you know, now, look, I've learned so much about myself. I'm trying to learn a little bit of French along the way, and, you know, just a different culture, mentality, and it is different over there in that respect. And I have learned a lot about myself and probably grew up a lot as well.
That's pretty cool. I mean, a lot of people don't ever get the opportunity to live abroad when they're younger, live and work abroad as well. Mm-hmm. You've had a bit of a hand, though, because, of course, Lucy Bronze, your Lioness teammate, and up till recently, Izzy Christensen and, of course, Nikita Paris as well are all that out there. How much does that help?
Oh, yeah, massively. Lucy's been great to me and Nikita. You know, she in French as well is brilliant, and she's very helpful, very caring, and, you know, we're all on the same team when it comes to England, so, you know, as much as we can help each other out, we do, and we've got a nice little group of us out there. Shanice, obviously, Dutch player, Kadisha, Canadian player. We've got a nice group, and we stick together, and, you know, me and Nikita have come through everything together since, you know, our Everton days, and we're both from the same part of Liverpool. And I think for us to kind of get our friendship back as well, back on track where it used to be, it's been really nice. So, yeah, we've gone from Liverpool to Lyon, so it's not too bad.
You've gone full circle. We'll get you back in the WSL soon, I hope. Obviously, you've got things to win out in France, first of all. But what's it like playing with Arda Hegerberg, Ballon d'Or winner, Wendy Renard, Amandine Henry, players like that?
Yeah, you've just mentioned only a handful of the players.
I know. Well, I couldn't list the whole squad.
I know, you just go the whole way through, I suppose. But yeah, you know, every day training with them players, you're only going to improve from training, let alone the games. And, you know, that level of intensity every day has definitely helped my game push on, and, you know, confidence levels. And you try different things with them players, because whether they come off or they don't, you know, the top players, you're going to get the ball back, you're going to get the chance to try it again. And it's been fantastic for me to train with them every day and just see their mentality, their winning mentality. And, yeah, like I said, even, you know, Nikita, Lucy, I'm sure they'd say the same thing. Their game has just gone to another level playing with them players.
Mm. Do you think that the Barclays FA WSL could learn something from the way Lyon do things? Could some of the clubs here learn anything?
You know, I think it's more mentality. I think in terms of ability and you know, it's individuals. We're not far away, and I think, you know, that I watch the league now from afar, and it's actually been quite nice to sit back and have a back seat and watch it. And the league's improving every year, and that goes without saying. And I think for me now, it's just that mentality of if a team was to come up against Lyon, it's more we are gonna compete and beat them, rather than maybe going, oh, at Lyon, we've probably only got a slight chance, maybe if we can beat them, if we can't. So I think it's just shifting that mentality a little bit. And, you know, listen, they've won year in, year out. So that mentality comes with winning. And I'm sure English teams aren't far away, to be honest.
Mm, and we potentially, when football does resume, may get more in the Champions League as well in a year or so's time, which will make it even more competitive. You were obviously captain at United, as you said, helped them gain promotion to the WSL. What's been your assessment of their season so far when you've been watching it from France?
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting. Like I said, it's actually been quite nice to take it back seat and, you know, I've put loyalties to the side and just watch it unfold a little bit. I think they've had a really good first season. They've just carried on where they left off, really. And, you know, I didn't expect any differently from Casey and the team there. They've got some fantastic individuals and they are a top side, and I can only see them improving. But again, like I said, I think the league as a whole has improved again. And, you know, the top three there, fighting for Champions League and to the WSL. I think it's been great to watch, and attendances have improved. So, you know, I hope that continues.
Yeah, there's been massive growth, and obviously with what's going on in the world at the moment, football massively takes a huge back seat, obviously.
Absolutely.
But when we kind of focus down on it, you know, outside of the bigger picture, if you like, and mm-hmm. see the growth of the women's game, that there is a concern that this could put it back a little bit. Your teammate, Arda Hegerberg, came out this week and basically said it was important that women's football doesn't lose position, explaining that women's football is sitting in the second row, for example, with men's football in the first row, but wants to make sure that it doesn't fade into the background. Do you feel, you know, with the fact there's been no announcement that the Women's Euros in 2021 is definitely going to move to 2022 yet, do you feel like the women's leagues have kind of been treated as an afterthought throughout all of this?
It's hard for me to say, because I get where you're coming from in terms of there's been no announcements. Obviously, us as players are still unsure when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, when the leagues are going to resume, if they are, if they're not. So that uncertainty is not nice, and it is an uneasy feeling. But like you said, I think first and foremost, let's make sure it gets done properly and people are healthy and safe first and foremost. And then obviously we concentrate on when it happens, how it happens. And I think, you know, like Ada said, we don't want it to take a back seat and become secondary to the men's game. They've made the decision on the men's Euros, and we're obviously now waiting to see what happens with ours. And whenever that is, we'll prepare properly for it. And, you know, it is what it is. And at the moment, we've just got to stay focused on what's next, really. And that for us now is the Olympics.
Yeah, gosh. And Olympics next year as well now. I mean, all that preparation. I saw that Jill Scott had been saying she hopes she's going to be ready. I mean, she could go on forever, couldn't she, Jill Scott? We certainly hope she did. By the way, if nobody's seen Twitter yet today, go and have a look at her obvious Jill message. She walks into a door frame. It's very funny. Anyway, just before I let you go, Alex, any unexpected hobbies you found whilst in lockdown? Anything that surprised yourself? Any baking, Sudoku, anything else?
I'd give baking a go, to be fair. You know, I've seen everyone on Instagram, you know, doing the banana bread, and I've just fancied a go. So, I mean, mine does not look like anyone else's on Instagram, so I'm not sure if they're everyone's banana bread, but yeah, I've been having a go, and it's just more for fun, really, and to, you know, pass the time. But yeah, give baking a go, but I'm not sure I'll carry on.
Right, well, I'll give you my address and you can post me some banana bread and I'll let you know how you do.
Not a problem.
Just finally, we're asking everybody in today's show what their favourite women's football ground is and why. Yeah. Obviously, you've played in many grounds. Which one was your favourite?
Do you know what? I'm gonna go a bit different here. I'm going to go for Marine in Crosby. I'm not sure if you remember it.
No, I don't.
It's where I started out with Everton. So we played there in our early days, early Super League days and Women's Super League days. And for me, it was a fortress. Like any team that came to Marine, you know, knew was in for a game against Everton. And I can honestly say, I made my debut there. I played with some top players, Farah, Rachel Unit, Jill Scott, Tony Duggan, Michelle Hinnigan. I could go on and on. And, I watched all my idols there, was managed by Mo Marley there, Andy Spence, and I had some fantastic memories there. Obviously, you know, I made some brilliant memories last year at Leigh, but for me, in my memory bank, I always go back to the Marine. It was just, they were the best days for me. And, you know, me and Nikita were actually speaking about that the other day. Funny enough that, you know, anyone who came to Marine knew they were in for a game.
Love that. Absolutely love that. That's my favourite so far. I'll be putting that out there again. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex. Awesome. Enjoy the rest of the lockdown with Jack and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thanks. Take care.
Take care. England and Lyon defender Alex Greenwood there, of course. This is Women's Football Weekly with me, Faker Others, on TalkSport 2. Don't forget, if you do miss any of our shows, you can catch up by subscribing to our new podcast. Women's Football Weekly is available for download on Spotify and all Apple products as well. Now, our academy and youth setup still functioning during lockdown. We're going to be heading to the West Midlands to find out next.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Women's Football Weekly with Faker Others.
Hi, I'm Ashley from Tottenham Hotspur and you're listening to the Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2.
You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2 with me, Faker Ruthers. Today we're asking, what is your favourite women's football ground and why? Here's a tweet from Sue. She says, as a Man United fan, the Leigh Sports Village is a great stadium and pitch, but two issues for her. It's not in Manchester and it doesn't serve chips. This year in the WSL, I enjoyed King's Meadow, she said. Well, maybe Leigh Sports Village needs to start serving chips, and then Sue will put you first. Sam says, the ground I'm looking forward to going back to is Sheffield United's Proact Stadium because of this being the place my beloved Blades play. Not the first time we've heard that. Sam, Rich Laverty, women's football writer, also one of his favourites too. We want you guys to get involved. Tweet us at TalkSport2 or use the hashtag TSWFW. We'll read out the rest of your tweets at the end of the show. Now, here on Women's Football Weekly, we want to bring you voices from all different levels of the women's game. We've spoken to players and managers throughout the leagues, but now let's chat to a couple of youth coaches on how they're keeping youngsters engaged with their clubs during the lockdown. Birmingham City's head of youth, Paul Cowie, and women's youth coach, Andy Ellery. Welcome to Talk Sport 2, both of you. Paul, I'll start with you. Can you provide us some kind of insight as to how the youth teams are functioning during lockdown? Must be quite difficult.
Yeah, hi, Faye. Good to speak to you, first of all. Yeah, very, very difficult, like with the current circumstances, with the youth players. One, because you don't know where, what they've got, what they can do, what they can't do. Our main functions are really to sort of, we've engaged by getting to group texts, group emails, to the parents from the 9s to 16s in majority of the time. We've got a players WhatsApp group for the academy lot that we've tried to engage them through. Video calls, and then the main one's been the video calls that we've done. Actually just engaging with the players, whether that's in small groups or even in large groups, just to see how they're getting on, really.
Yeah, and how are they all coping?
Very, very well, to be honest. I think that's a lot down to their parents, who have been brilliant with them, kind of thing. Obviously, engaging them through obviously schoolwork and then through their footballing, I think, first of all, and then through the staff that have engaged via either via text or via these video calls. Just to check in with the players and just see how they're all generally doing. So, yeah, positives at the moment.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. Andy, hello. You're specifically a goalkeeping coach, I understand. I suppose that makes things even tougher for you. So how are you kind of keeping the players' technical skills going? I'm assuming that most of them don't have Batak machines at home.
Yeah, no, they don't. Not that I know of, anyway. I mean, we keepers like to do things differently anyway, to be honest. So, yeah, we've got some home programmes that look at some of the more basic skills, such as your catch, your dive and your footwork. So it's just getting the kids to use walls, like rebound nets, using other people as servers. So I've seen a few videos from the parents serving them. To be fair, their accuracy is a lot to be desired. It's not great. But obviously, they're kind of doing what they can, which is brilliant. And also, we've got some individual and position-specific gym plans, so where the keepers can work on their speed, their strength, their agility, and these don't require hardly any equipment, so they can do them wherever, when in the house, the garden, the park. And some of our S&C guys have been using Zoom to take tutorials and almost kind of run a session remotely, which is quality. So we've done a couple of tasks as well with the girls that design their own gloves, and we've also made it a video of the girls doing saves throughout the week, so if anyone wants to see that, it's on my Twitter account. So really, we've been using this time really productively, to be honest.
They've designed their own gloves. Talk me through this.
Yeah, so I sent them out a blank template, and basically the brief was design your own gloves. As soon as we're back from lockdown, you're going to be wearing the gloves, design them around like your personality. If there's anything you want to go on them in terms of colours, designs, so to kind of be creative as possible. And the ones that have come back have been absolutely brilliant. So again, I've put them all over social media, and who knows, hopefully when we're back, we might be able to get some of them made up.
Oh, we'll certainly have a look at those. What's the best one that you've seen? Brightly coloured or slightly more demure?
Well, there's been a few quite brightly coloured ones, but I think there's one from Miguel Saf, and she did one around obviously some of the things that she's just going through family wise at the minute, which is really good to see in terms of being able to support her family with some situations that are going on at the minute. So in terms of like a really personal really personal level, that was brilliant to see.
Really love that. Paul, you've got teams from ages 9 to 21, I understand, up to the senior teams as well. What kind of different programmes and creative ways are you keeping the players focused to develop their game?
Well, lots of different ways, as many as we can, really. Like I said, we've used the Zoom calls quite a lot, which have been really productive. Within those, I mean, obviously, the little ones up to the older ones, they vary in terms of what we've been doing. A couple of things with the little ones, we've had pick a seven-a-side team, but they could only pick players from Birmingham City. so that could engage them from their own team all the way up to the first team. Some of the girls picked just first-team players. A few others actually went through and had a few under-16s in an under-dev, like they're an under-10s. So they had a few under-16s, academy players, and then first-team players as well, which was quite nice to see that I suppose they know who they are, and even the ones higher up. So, and that, I suppose that just shows what we're about as a club, being a family club, being all-inclusive, like throughout the ages.
Important to have role models.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the young ones do look up to the 16s, and then we've got the 16s looking up, go, where's the next step, which is the academy, and then the academy up to the first team. So that there's a continuous pathway at the club. And the girls can see it, and I think the girls see each other as role models, the ones in higher age groups. And we've tried to keep that going as much as we can while we've been off. But again, obviously throws up problems.
I was going to ask you, obviously, we don't know how long this is going to last for. Is there any kind of concern that, you know, we're at a key part of their development for some of these girls? Is there a worry that they could go backwards a little bit?
I suppose we've had this conversation. I suppose there is a worry they could. But I also think that the drive from the players themselves, that sometimes I think some of them could even come back in a better position than when we actually were, what we might expect them to, because obviously we're all going to have expectations about how the players are going to come back physically, mentally and all that. Some of the players, the work they've been doing that we've seen come back from the parents, like just technical practices, the physical stuff that the S&C coaches have been working on them via Zoom, they're doing loads out there. So I think a lot of the players will come back in a really, really good and strong position. And I've said it before, I think that's down to the staff that are setting the challenges to actually make sure that they can actually come back in a really, really positive mindset and a positive way, physically, mentally, technically. And that's a challenge for us to still keep pushing them.
Yeah, exactly right, Paul, because mental health just as important as physical health. How else are you helping them off the pitch?
It's just the constant check-ins, really. I mean, the best one we had was, again, coping with them. We had the 16s in the academy, had a chat with Kez Harrop, who's the first team captain.
Mm-hmm. We've had her on Women's Football Weekly a couple of times.
Brilliant, yeah. Kez is brilliant with the younger kids anyway. She just had a chat with them around what are they actually doing, and then a lot of the conversations actually built into Kez was doing exactly the same kind of thing. So it just showed that even the 16th, the academy players are in the same position as the first team players, and stuff like that we've been doing, really, just to touch base with them. There's lots of things we've done with it. There's a mental health show called If You Care, Share, that's out there, and they've put stuff our way, which we've sent out to the players and parents. And I suppose the other one is we've just been said to the players' parents, we're on the end of a phone if you ever need us, kind of thing, or a call, and just being open for them whenever they possibly might have needed the chat, needed a kind of help, and stuff like that, really, just to make sure that parents, players, their well-being is in the right place.
Yeah, it's so important. Andy, on a personal level, I saw your interview with our friends at She Kicks magazine this morning when I was doing my research on you. You highlighted something that does tend to get overlooked as well, and that's the personal financial implications, because you're actually self-employed coaches as well, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's a tough situation at the minute. I mean, not just for me, but for hundreds of coaches I know. I was fortunate enough to work in football for a long time at different levels, and I know people are really in the same situation. I mean, I don't coach for the money. It's about the kids. It's about them, about who you interact with on a daily basis. So when things are kind of normal, you don't really think about the money. You just kind of get on with things, and it's kind of an afterthought. But I think off the back of this lockdown, people will kind of make sure that they're going to safeguard themselves from extreme situations like this. But I guess there's many other industries that are facing similar challenges, and obviously football sports coaches are kind of just one of a number. But I guess I'm just kind of using this time to kind of reach out to anyone who needs to chat and to make sure that I'm staying really positive and keep doing things in terms of working with the girls, setting challenges, doing things on the internet, doing my literature, trying to keep active. And then I guess just speaking to the kids one-on-one and making sure that even though it's an issue for you personally, you don't really show it and you get on with it and you keep strong, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. Positivity, really crucial. Paul, just finally, again, sticking with the financial side of things, how is the youth setup coping financially? Because there obviously is a worry, as there is across football, about funding and the drip down into important community projects and, of course, youth setups.
Yeah, we don't know where we're going to be, do we, any of us really, when we come out of these. Currently, we've got the funding and everything that allows the staff to still be able to be involved when they're doing things with the girls, like we said, any on the WhatsApp groups and the Zoom kind of things that they're actually interacting. So we're in a good position at the moment, kind of thing, to continue to function until the end of the season. And then we've got a number of different plans in place looking in for next season. So currently in a good position, we're confident that everything will continue at the club kind of thing. So we don't see anything at the moment, but there's lots of things that could happen. But we've got a lot of contingency plans around those.
Excellent. Good to hear. Both of you, thanks so much for joining us on Women's Football Weekly. Good luck with everything. Stay in touch as well. That was Paul Cowie, Head of Youth, and Andy Ellery, Women's Youth Coach at Birmingham City Football Club. I'm Faye Carruthers. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. Next up, we're checking in with you. How are you coping without live football?
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio.
Hi, I'm Georgia Stanway and you're listening to the Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2.
Good to have you with us on TalkSport 2. This is Women's Football Weekly with me, Faye Carruthers. You've heard from a player, journalist and academy coaches. Now it's your turn. What have you been up to? What do you think should happen with the rest of the WSL and Championship season? Let's talk to Richard Paish from Bristol City Women's Supporters Club and Phil Mullin from Tottenham Women's Supporters Club. Let's start with you, Richard. What have you been up to? And are you now used to life with no football?
Yeah, I think I think we are actually now, aren't we? Being kept busy. It's obviously running the Bristol City Supporters Club. We're still busy doing the social media posts and all things like that. But really missing it.
Yeah, I bet. Just when Bristol was starting to get a few points on the board as well. If the rest of the season goes ahead, what do you think should happen?
I don't think from our point of view, we still got a lot of games to we still need wins obviously to stay up. I'm not a fan of playing behind closed doors. I personally like to see it played, you know, if possible, in front of fans. I mean, because that's what it's all about. To be honest, it's all about the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we spoke to Natalie, a Manchester United fan, last week. She said she was video calling other supporters to keep in touch. If you're not able to meet up at the games, how have you been keeping up in touch with your fellow supporters?
Well, we've got our social media outlets, Bristol City Supporters Club, on Twitter and Facebook. So we're always keeping in contact through that. And that's it, basically.
We've been asking everybody what their favourite ground is. I'm assuming you're going to say Stoke Gifford.
Yeah, it's Stoke Gifford's really good. I mean, it's really good for fans, really, to get in for getting autographs. And yeah, we're lovely little friendly ground we have down there.
Absolutely. Thank you, Richard. Let's bring in Phil. How are you? Same question. What's your favourite ground? You love the Hive?
Do like the Hive. However, I think historically, obviously, we've only just moved there. For us, I think our previous venue, which was Chesham Football Club, much smaller, but very compact, very friendly. Like's already been said, you can chat with the players afterwards, that kind of stuff. And we won two promotions there. So from that perspective, That's my favourite.
Excellent. Good memories. Good memories. What's the general feeling among Spurs fans? Obviously, you guys mid-table at the moment. So if the season did end immediately in terms of relegation promotion, wouldn't affect you too much. You did a poll today, didn't you?
That's right. We ran a poll on Twitter and it came through as the majority was to void the season. Although there was still sort of pretty close with to wait and play games. But without fans. But I mean, the number one priority is health and welfare of both players, staff, and fans. So I think there are no easy solutions, and there's pros and cons for whichever option is chosen. But I think, as Rich said earlier on the programme, I think there's no need to necessarily rush it right now. Sit and wait, see how things pan out, and if we can get it done, I think possibly with fans. That'd be great, but it's just really, really difficult. And as you said earlier, you're asking everybody the same question. And I think some guidance from the FA, WSL, would be really good because we're not hearing a great deal out of them at the moment.
No, absolutely. Well said. And that's a perfect point to end on. Thank you, Phil and Richard there, Bristol City and Tottenham fans. As we've been mentioning throughout today's show, been asking your favourite football grounds. A couple of final tweets for you. Derek says New Ferens Park in Durham, great atmosphere, great afternoon out. And Lucy loves going to Boldmere St Michael's FC to watch the mighty Villa. That's it from us at Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. Thanks to England and Lyon defender Alex Greenwood, women's football writer Rich Laverty, Paul and Andy from Birmingham City Academy, and our Bristol City and Spurs fans Richard and Paul. Don't forget, we are now a podcast, so download us on Spotify and iTunes. Next week we have England assistant coach and Phil Neville's number 2 Bev Priestman joining us. Don't forget, we're here every Monday on TalkSport 2 from 6 until 7
across the UK, online and on DAB digital radio.
Oh, the momentum is with them now.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers.
And Jill Scott scores inside 2 minutes
on TalkSport 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.